If you're tired of bad news, if you need some positivity, if you want to support small businesses, then welcome to Happy, Grateful, Blessed with Kaysville's own mayor, Tammy Tran. Here, you'll get to see the best of humanity from within Utah's hidden gem, Kaysville City. Every month, you'll discover small businesses, hear unique and incredible stories, and understand the difference you make in this wonderful city. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to this podcast so that you'll never miss a chance to find a new business to support and learn what makes a city like this one work as well as it does. So join us as we explore Happy, Grateful, Blessed with Tammy Tran.
Hi, everybody. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you both for being here, and I'll introduce you briefly. Yeah. I've got Chris Beers, and Chris, you're a nurse practitioner.
Yeah.
And then I have Dr. Nick Noble.
Hey there.
Thank you for being here. And you guys are at Common Spirit Family Medical Clinic in Kaysville. Did I
Common Spirit Family Medicine Kaysville.
Kaysville, okay.
Long name.
And you guys are over by the Smiths in West Kaysville. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yep.
All right. And the sign above your door is incorrect because you were recently purchased.
Correct. Yeah.
So we can make that clarification.
This Davis Medical Group. Yeah. Still above the big sign.
Which is now Common Spirit.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, it sounds like our signs are going to be getting updated probably this summer.
All right.
So we'll get the correct name up there. But yeah, we were recently purchased or acquired by Common Spirit Health.
So, well, please tell us a little bit about your practice so that we all can start going there.
Yeah, for sure. And so, I've probably been at that practice for about 5 years or so now. And when I got there, just opened up about maybe a year or so prior to that. And so we're connected there on that piece next to Smith's and across the street from kind of Barnes Park area. And so we, you know, both do family medicine, primary care. And so we really focus on kind of preventive medicine, getting your physicals, your wellness visits taken care of, and trying to prevent as much issues as we can. But of course, from day-to-day practice, we see the whole gamut of problems because everything really comes to primary care. And, you know, we kind of believe that everything really starts in primary care. Because if you're sick with something, you know, relatively simple, usually you see the family medicine doctor, us. And if something's complicated, then you usually start with us. And if it's something that we can't, you know, fix and solve, then we may need to use, you know, referrals and pull all our resources and that type of thing. But we see a huge gamut of issues dealing from the really simple, straightforward things to the really complicated and frustrating and chronic things.
Yeah.
Chris, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're sort of new to the organization, right?
I am, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I've only been here about 4 months, started kind of the end of November, beginning of December. Recently graduated from a Utah school as a nurse practitioner, and that was Rocky Mountain University of Health Professions. It's a school down in kind of the Orem-Provo area. And then I was a student with Dr. Noble here a couple times, and he was seemed like he was impressed with me or something because he put in a good word. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah, I was able to get a job and right out of school there. And yeah, really enjoyed working with Common Spirit and working with the people here in Kaysville, getting to know them, and very welcoming and friendly community so far. And also, a little side note, it's also a very beautiful community here.
You guys have a lot of parks. Don't we, in Kaysville?
Yeah.
So, it's a pretty place. Yeah. And you're both Davis County residents.
Right? Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're really familiar with the area as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What type of patients do you see? I mean, you said it's preventative health. And so our patients, they're not referred to you because you're primary care. So they're seeking you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Usually, yeah.
Yes, and so we see every age, from newborn to every age.
Okay.
And so another challenge with our sign up front is it still says OB, but we do not see patients in the womb still.
Oh, okay.
We don't do OB. There used to be an OBGYN, a few doctors that came to our clinic a couple times a week years ago. This was like in the first year that clinic existed and hasn't since, and so we're still embarrassed that the sign still says OB, but they will eventually change that. But other than doing OB care in the womb. We do every age. And so newborn on up, and talking about preventive care that you mentioned, it's like there's kind of a difference between well child checks, and a lot of people will bring in their kids very diligently to the doctor when they're born, and they'll see that newborn exam, and then they'll bring them back in for, you know, 1 month well child, or even sooner if they're having weight issues or things like that, and then go through that kind of well child schedule where you bring your kid into the doctor several times in their first year, just in preventative health to make sure everything's developing correctly. And then a lot of people will kind of lose that, you know, flow as kids get into, especially teenage years. And then they usually just think about coming in to get a doctor's check for sports physicals and that type of thing. But really, we believe in a well visit at every year of life, basically. And so even that 18 to 40 years, and then 40 to 65. And then a lot of things change after 65. We're talking about different types of questions and testing and preventative health for elderly care, et cetera. And so, that's kind of what we pride ourselves on, is seeing a wide gamut of both ages and problems.
Who is Common Spirits? I mean, as a company, I'm not really familiar with the company, so can you tell me a little bit about the organization?
Yeah. So Common Spirit, I think there's some complication exactly who they are, but as far as I understand it, yeah, they are a nonprofit organization.
Nonprofit organization. I was just mentioning, yeah. Chris, you know, what he's alluding to is just that they've been through a transition themselves.
Yeah.
Where they're mainly a Utah, Colorado, and Kansas entity, and they had a partnership with Advent Health in Colorado.
Oh, okay.
And then just before they came into Utah, they kind of dissolved that partnership where it's just Common Spirit. And so, but yeah, their kind of focus is that Utah, Colorado, Kansas, you know, area, from my understanding. And so, for example, if you're familiar with the Steward name, Steward had been a healthcare organization in Utah for about 5 years, and Common Spirit basically bought them out, which includes 5 hospitals and then a bunch of associated clinics and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Including like Davis Hospital.
Oh, Davis Hospital is under this umbrella?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, that's good to know. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because, right, I'm not really familiar with it, and people will maybe wonder. So do you accept all insurance companies, or are you private pay, or...
That's a good question.
Combination.
Because, yeah, we do accept most private insurances, other than we're starting to be able to accept some Select Health plans. But in general, we don't accept a lot of Select Health, but we do take, you know, self-pay, Medicare, Medicaid, and
okay.
I would just say most private insurances.
Yeah, we pretty much take all the government insurances like Medicaids and Medicares. And then we take most private insurances, and the only kind of standout is that Select Health had recently had to deal with Common Spirit in general and getting their providers to be able to be credentialed. Of course, as a doctor, it's like, we want to take everyone.
Exactly.
We didn't go to med school to refuse to see anybody.
That's true.
So
that's
a good point.
Dealing with insurance is our bane in general.
Sure.
But we're pretty excited because we're optimistic that hopefully that goes through as expected, and we'll be able to take pretty much every insurance.
Well, that will be wonderful moving forward. Tell us a little bit about why you chose your professions. Who wants to start? Because you have to have a passion. Lots of work, right?
Yeah. Do you want to start?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. because I have an 11-year-old boy, and he's my oldest of 3, and he you know, because whenever I asked him, of course, he's really young. He's not even to junior high yet. But I always, you know, bug him about, what do you want to do when you grow up? You know, have you thought about it? Are you interested? Just trying to spark his interest. And he's usually just always turns me away and is like, oh, Dad, you know, just asking these things. And I respect him for exploring many different things, but I always remember just that was the plan when I was super young, when
really?
I was in elementary, which is, I'm going to grow up and be a doctor. This is the plan.
Did you have parents in the field, or? grandparents?
Yeah, my mother taught anatomy at Layton High, and she also worked in at Lakeview for a long time in the lab in microbiology. And so she loved health and health sciences and that type of thing, and that kind of sparked my interest. And so, but yeah, I always remember growing up, that's just what I always wanted to do. And then when I went into medical school, I felt the opposite, because I initially did not plan on going into family medicine and was loving exploring all the different things, like different surgeries and different specialties, etc. But what always just drew me back to family medicine is one, the variety, and one, just the patient connection, where it's like, I feel like it is the ultimate specialty, if you will, where you build long-term relationships. You know, of course, they're, you know, challenging patients both diagnostically and just, you know, personality and that type of thing. But that's my biggest interest, is forming long-term relationships with people, where I feel like a lot of my patients that I've seen for years are, you know, I feel like I want to help them as part of my family. I want to help them as best that I can.
It is one of the few fields that you can do a cradle to grave sort of relationship with, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah, you can see them as children and they can grow up with you in family medicine. That's really neat.
Yeah. I actually had a patient recently come in and he's in his 50s, and he was just like, "Oh, how old are you?" And I said, "Oh, I'm 28. And he was like, "Oh, perfect. I don't need to ever find another new doctor." <That's>, like, "I'll outlive you."
So
I was
true.
Like, "Well, we hope so." Yeah. So, but yeah, my journey, a little bit similar in some ways, is, yeah, I always knew I wanted to go into healthcare. I always, I don't know if saying I had a talent is the right word, but I always had kind of an affinity toward, you know, anatomy and biology and those kind of life sciences, if you will, growing up. So I always knew I wanted to go into healthcare, and, you know, for a time I, you know, thought maybe going into pharmacy, you know, becoming a doctor, becoming a nurse. And, you know, part of it in becoming a nurse practitioner was just from a practical side, you know, knowing myself and knowing how life happens, is becoming a nurse practitioner, there's kind of like stepping stones. So you become like a CNA, then you become an LPN, then you become a registered nurse, then you go on to become a nurse practitioner. And so there are kind of those stepping stones where, if, you know, let's say I, you know, became a nurse and then something happened and I couldn't continue with my education, you know, some life event, well then, you know, at least I'm still a nurse, right? Whereas, I don't know if this is accurate, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Noble, but becoming like a DO or an MD, it's kind of like doctor bust type of a thing. It's like, you got to go all the way.
You've got to finish it.
Yeah, if you don't finish, then, you know, you're out a lot of time and a lot of money. And so, you know, just for me personally, just the practical approach just seemed like the way to go, you know, so that's kind of why I got into it. But yeah, and then just, you know, personal reasons. Yeah, I really love people and I love helping people and making them happy and healthy and seeing them. You know, there's almost no better feeling in this world for me than seeing a patient who comes in sick or with mental health problems or with whatever disease, and then, you know, getting them to see the right specialist, getting them the right treatment, and just seeing the, you know, dramatic changes that can happen in people's lives. You know, there's really no better feeling than having like a success story.
And to know that you personally were able to make a difference, that's
exactly.
Got to be so rewarding.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Nurse practitioner, how many years does that take? Because it is awesome that, like you said, mm-hmm. you had a career at the end of each stage, which is great.
Exactly. Yeah, so I started, went on a LDS mission and got back in the summer of 2015. And then I just graduated in the summer of 2023. So it took me about 8 years in total. If I did my math right. Yeah, that's 8 years, right? Yeah, it took me about 8 years. It was probably a little bit less of schooling. It was probably closer to like 7.5 of like semesters of schooling. 7.5 years worth, I should say. That was, so I actually have a doctorate as a nurse practitioner. You can also go a shorter time and just get a master's degree.
Oh, okay.
So it just kind of depends on what you're kind of going for.
That's neat.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, your passion for medicine, we appreciate. I'm so grateful for really smart people to be able to do it. I remember my mom, I'm looking at you thinking, my mom, I remember her before she passed, she'd say, Tammy, the doctors are getting so young. and at the time, I just thought, okay, mom. But it's so true, because as we age, it is kind of fun to be able to see refreshing energy and youthful vitality. Yeah.
Dr. Noble teases me all the time and says I should only shave like once a week. So I look a little bit older. I have a little bit of scruff.
A little bit of scruff to make you seem a little bit older. No,
exactly.
It's fantastic and wonderful accomplishments. So I have a question for you. I have a sister-in-law who felt like something was wrong a couple of years ago. And we'd have these conversations. And I was diagnosed with endometrial cancer when I was 37.
Oh, wow.
So I told her, I said, look, this is what it sounds like. You need to talk to your doctor, your gynecologist about this. And so she did it. And she said, yeah, they've run tests and everything seems fine, but she still wasn't feeling well. Mm-hmm. Anyway, flash forward to, I think 5 years later, full-blown cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So she's barely finished up her chemotherapy treatments. And now she's working on radiation, but it's been horribly difficult for her. And looking back, I'm thinking, that's crazy. I knew what the signs were.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of third hand knew what the signs were. She was doing everything she thought was correct and right, but they still didn't catch it. Now, we're not laying blame anywhere, but I'm just saying, what do you tell patients who have this nagging feeling that something's wrong? How can they get in front of it to prevent things that are worse? Do you have any good advice for that?
That's a great question, because because things like that can be so challenging. Where if you take a step back and think about it in a broad perspective, it's like these are just preventative health in general is the reason why we're trying to do physicals every year, why we think about, okay, depending on our age, depending on our risk factors, our family history, there's so many things that you talk about with the doctor of what type of screenings do I need versus, you know, mammograms for breast cancer, colonoscopies for colon cancer. You know, cervical cancer screenings, labs looking for, you know, our blood counts, our kidney, our liver function, and those type of things. And so from kind of a personal perspective, it's challenging. Of course, you wonder what type of diagnostic testing they did for your sister and that type of thing. And, you know, they could have, if they had done everything right, but still missed something, then what do you do? You know, how do you kind of go back when yourself as a patient, or a lot of times this comes up as like a mother and their child just feeling like, I know something's wrong. And many times this child doesn't have maybe the capacity to express all the details of what's going on. And so, you know, we tell patients is just, we never give up on you. And so we will go through this with you. Of course, sometimes these type of things on the opposite end can lead to, I don't want people to constantly worry and go to bed at night thinking, could there be this wrong and this wrong and this wrong that can come up and I might not feel it, and we drive ourselves crazy in that way. But at the same time, it's like you feel a strong impression that something is not right. And I know these are the signs that are detailed, especially with a strong family history of this particular type of cancer and similar symptoms and signs, that it's just kind of like, well, you know, we're going to pull the next step and the next resource. It's like a lot of times patients will go to the doctor and we might order certain tests, and those tests might come back normal, and they felt like, well, that was it, and they didn't find anything wrong, so I'm fine. But it's like, well, there might be a next step and a next step and a next step, and we'll just never give up, basically. But from a personal perspective, I can imagine how just incredibly challenged that might be.
From a patient perspective, when the tests are run and the doctor says, you know, I don't see anything, you seem completely fine, what can a patient do to not sound extreme? And to not sound silly, you know, in terms of saying, no, doctor, hey, I don't feel like, I feel like something's off. I think we're missing something. What can they do to advocate for themselves? Because, you know, it's kind of intimidating to have your professionals tell you, you know, you're good. we don't see anything. And you just sit there and worry yourself to sick. But a lot of times, you know, you've got that gut feeling and you know something's wrong and it turns out to be the case. So as a patient, to be taken seriously by a physician, what can I do to advocate for myself?
That is a really good question. Because yeah, sometimes, you know, we get patients who, just exactly what you're saying, you know, they still have that nagging feeling. And sometimes, you know, when we're feeling anxious about, potential diagnosis and we're being told, you know, well, everything's okay. Like we've run all the tests that we need to run. You know, we get anxious and that can kind of come out as like anger. So the first thing I would say is, yeah, don't get angry at us. You know, like, you know, we're just, you know,
we're on
trying
the same team.
Yeah, we're on the same team. We're trying to work toward your health. And, you know, we're trying to also, you know, not land you with all of these, you know, quote unquote, unnecessary tests, unnecessary bills that, you know, can kind of cause patient harm, you know, so we're also trying to balance that. But I think, yeah, just approaching us and coming to us in kind of a calm way and saying like, you know, I understand that these tests are normal, but is there anything else we can do? And usually, yeah, if you come to a doctor and ask, you know, if there's anything else we can do, we're not going to usually say no, you know, we're going to either refer you to somebody who can help or, you know, we might, you know, tell you to get like a second opinion or see what other tests we can run. Because yeah, we want to help you. That's our ultimate goal is, yeah, we do want to help you. We want you to be happy. We don't want you to, and healthy, and we don't want you to, you know, we want to prevent these things and catch these diagnoses early so that, you know, we don't have to go through, you know, terrible treatments. And so, yeah, I think that's
I would also say, yeah, to second that, it's like we have scenarios where a patient comes in and has, you know, some issues going on, and we might start a workup for those issues. And then they might either need a higher level of care just because something was a problem that we're started to identify, or we haven't quite identified all the cause of their symptoms. And either way, we might need to say, refer to a specialist, say like a gynecologist in that example. And if somebody is seeing that specialist and then they get worked up and they kind of feel dissatisfied with their care, they might follow up with us. And this happens from time to time where they say, you know, I just really didn't feel like I connected with that specialist. They did this, you know, testing, or maybe they just told me that I was fine. They didn't want to do any testing at all. And they kind of felt like it was a waste of time, or that they just weren't connected with them. And, you know, in that scenario, we'll review their notes from that specialist, from that doctor, and we'll review, you know, what was done. Do we think everything was appropriate? I'm not pretending to have, you know, the knowledge of that specialist, but I'm saying, well, this seems appropriate in this scenario, and they might have capability of certain diagnostic procedures that I won't because it takes their specialty or something like that. And I might sit down with the patient and say, okay, well, this, you know, all these diagnostic procedures were negative, and so let's kind of think, you know, indirectly here that maybe it's not caused by something that you may think it's caused by. Or what I'm really getting at is, it's, you know, it's not wrong to ask for a second opinion if you feel that way. It's not offensive, especially to your primary care doctor, to ask for a second opinion.
Yes.
To say, I just didn't really feel like we're getting to the root cause of what's going on, and so I'd really like a second opinion from somebody else. And to get a referral from us to, you know, a different doctor is valid.
Okay. That's good to know for people who might be listening, who are in that hard spot where, yes, my doctor is great, we've got this great relationship, but I still don't feel good.
Yeah.
In terms of your network, the organizational network that you're part of, what can you do in office? Can you put casts on? Can you do x-rays? What are you able to do, and what will you have to refer maybe to Davis Hospital to do?
Yeah, good question. And so at our office, we do different procedures in terms of joint injections, like for arthritis, shoulder injections, elbow, knees, those type of things, trigger finger, certain skin procedures like removing moles, removing suspicious moles, cysts, ganglion cysts, those type of things. And so those type of in-office procedures is what we do a lot day by day as well. In terms of kind of what you're alluding to in acute injuries, Sometimes we'll see a patient and we can put on, we can do like a splinting, or many times we'll just use different braces that that you can get. Right now we have a really nice x-ray room and an x-ray machine, but we had to sacrifice a part of that x-ray machine during COVID to our partners because of COVID budget cuts back in 2020. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so in the future, we'd love to say that we're going to get that x-ray working again, because we've invested a lot into that nice room and machine as it is. But right now, we refer people out for imaging, so we'll just order it to either the hospital or imaging center or something nearby, that type of thing, for imaging. But yeah, what other procedures do we do in the office, Chris?
Yeah, I think you listed most of them. I mean, other than, you know, if you come in for like a vaccine, we do most like routine vaccines. And if you come in for a visit and need like blood work, we can do in the office.
Yeah, so we'll just take the blood in the office. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't need to drive around to wherever.
To
yeah, I think otherwise we covered pretty much everything we do.
Are your office hours standard? So no after hours, urgent care type services?
Mm, we're on 8:30 to 5, okay. Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yep. That's really good. So, and you're right there by Smith, so it's very convenient to just stop off and then go to the pharmacy and pick up your medicine. And
hey, yeah, there you go.
Your NyQuil and whatever else you need.
Yeah, exactly. And we are trying to, you know, build up our business here. And, you know, so we do have, you know, some good availability. We do walk-in appointments. We do telehealth appointments, so you don't even actually have to come in. You can, you know, sit at home in your pajamas or whatever.
So telehealth, is that only after the initial appointment, or can you set up telehealth initially?
That's a good question. It kind of depends on what the visit is for. So, you know, if it's a visit for something like, we see a lot of patients with ADHD who take like Adderall or other controlled stimulant substances. So in that case, we would need to see you in person like once, but then after that, we can just, you know, see you on telehealth for all subsequent like refills. If you're just like sick, you know, telehealth is usually fine for like a first visit. If you, you know, think you might have like a sinus infection or something going on. So yeah, it does kind of depend, but usually, yeah, if we've seen you in office like one time, basically all subsequent visits could just be telehealth.
So. Oh, I didn't know that. That's good to know.
Mm-hmm. That's at least for our clinic. Yeah. Can't speak for other.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. There are some, if you've had a history of a particular rash or that type of thing, that we could, you know, maybe figure out over telehealth, but I would ask many skin things, just come into the office. You know, there are times where people try to show their mole over the video camera, and it's like, I really need to see this in person. Just come into the office, please.
For sure.
That's a good point.
If someone wants to schedule a telehealth appointment initial appointment, and they're not familiar with your office, where would they go to do that?
So we do have online scheduling.
Okay.
That is kind of a newer feature that we've had. I believe you can still schedule telehealth online, but if all else fails, you can call our office.
Okay, and they can give information.
Schedule. Yeah.
Yeah, we do have online scheduling in general, where you can schedule through the website, which I believe is commonspirit.mountain.org.
I
was going to say, put you on the spot with that. We can check. Okay, so that is nice. That's a nice, very convenient way to get a hold of your doctor.
Yes, absolutely.
Which in this crazy new world works so well.
I know, right? Yeah, you wouldn't think several years ago that you just make an online appointment and then see your doc through telehealth and that type of thing.
I know.
Some good things did come out of COVID.
Yes, right, for sure. Convenience being a big one.
Yeah, convenience and increased access. So.
Right, and there's no reason to not see a doctor, really, because...
Yeah.
There's also lots of payment options available out there.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It is good. Is there anything else you'd like to share about your clinic or your practice?
Yeah,
we want people to know about you. We want people to go in.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think Dr. Noble already kind of spoke about this a little bit, but yeah, I just kind of want to emphasize the idea of preventative health. What's that quote you wrote in your article? An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Yes.
Love that quote.
I do too.
I believe it's attributed to Benjamin Franklin.
Okay.
And I believe he was talking about fire prevention. but it works so well.
So well for medicine, yeah, because, you know, yeah, coming in for your yearly physical, you know, we check like your cholesterol, we screen you for diabetes as you get older, as Dr. Noble mentioned, we do certain cancer screenings like mammograms, colon cancer screenings. And yeah, really, as we catch these conditions and are able to prevent them, it just leads to a much better health experience and much better outcome for patients, you know, as we, you know, look to prevent disease rather than treat disease. And so, yeah, just really emphasizing like, yeah, come in, let's check your cholesterol, let's, you know, check your family history, you know, coming from a holistic approach. And you know, if you have a family history of endometrial cancer and, or a family history of breast cancer, you know, let's go and get you screened. And if we catch, you know, these cancers and other conditions early, you know, we're able to treat them much more effectively and like I said, have better patient outcomes. And so, yeah, just recommending people get those yearly physical exams. So.
Yeah, one of the biggest questions we're getting right now is about weight loss. Lots of people
are a very popular thing
coming in to talk about weight loss, especially because of the GLP-1 medications and that type of thing. Has been an explosion in weight loss medicine in general.
Yeah,
and so yeah, because we usually talk to patients about kind of a wide variety of medical weight loss, if you will, and because we're usually starting to talk about. We usually start with talking about diet and exercise and what statistically will help get to weight loss in general.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of recommendations from like the American Heart Association in just terms of plaque prevention, like preventing heart attacks and strokes, such as like Mediterranean diet and cardio exercise and those type of things. But especially in America, and we're no exception, you know, our diet is not perfect.
Right.
And so a lot of weight loss diets really focus on different ways of dealing with carbs in general. And thus comes with these GLP-1 type medications, these weight loss injections, which basically help us process carbs and help our insulin receptors be more sensitive so that insulin can drive that sugar from our blood into our tissue cells to help us process it better and that type of thing. And so we get questions a lot. We usually have pretty in-depth discussions about risks and benefits, where there is some, you know, really rare risks that are still statistically significant in, you know, the studies of these medications. And then there's more specific things like monitoring your kidney function to make sure that you can process these medications and, you know, any interactions with other medications, or if you just would benefit better by a different type of medication altogether, et cetera. Because, you know, the interesting part of that, right, is these type of medications, these GLP-1 injections are originally studied for diabetes, and people lost a lot of weight who had diabetes and were getting these treatments for their blood sugar specifically. And then, you know, companies along the line said, well, you know, are we safe to use this in people who are not diabetic? Because the idea is that, well, if we use this injection and I'm not diabetic, isn't it just going to drop my blood sugars and I'm going to be lightheaded and pass out by taking this medicine? And so, but honestly, it's kind of a gradient between that they can still do that, especially in the higher doses, if you don't have blood sugar to spare, if you will, because you're not diabetic. But at the same time, they have been studied for, you know, non-diabetic patients just for weight loss and can be safe in that scenario too. And so that's kind of a big topic right now that we get asked all the time.
I'm really glad you brought that up because it is a big deal. So you're kind of referring, the layman term would be the semi-glutide shots.
Yes.
Right,
yes.
The injections.
Main generic.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's kind of the buzzword on the street if you're talking about weight loss. So someone could go to your clinic and potentially get injections if they qualify it and everything else.
Yes.
You do have them available. Okay.
Yeah, sure.
That is hugely popular.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm hearing from, you can go over here and you just show up and they can, you know, they give you shots. And And I've asked, well, is it medically supervised? Oh, yeah, I think there's someone there that's a nurse that, you know, or, you know, there's just a wide gamut of facilities and locations and services available. And they are super, super popular.
Yeah,
exactly. And so we love to talk about weight loss in general.
Okay.
We love when people want, desirous enough to focus on their health and, you know, try to get healthier and that type of thing. And we'll talk to you about all the gamut of possibilities and kind of find what's going to be best for you in that scenario. And so, for example, if we think that semaglutide is going to be a good fit and it's going to be safe and those type of things, then that's something that we would prescribe to the pharmacy. And there's different options now, right? Between if you're going to use insurance for the injections, then a lot of insurances will cover really well if you're, you know, obese and you're diabetic and you're taking insulin. But if you're just using it for weight loss alone, a lot of insurances, and some still do, but it's a big hassle and there's prior authorizations back and forth, but a lot of them won't. But now there's pharmacies that do a lot of cash pay services that say, okay, this is our cash pay. If you're using it just for weight loss and you don't want to use insurance, these are kind of your options and that type of thing.
Okay.
Yeah, because I don't want to give the impression that, if you show up, you know, you're going to get semaglutide or these medications at our clinic, that we have some magic formula that, you know, you automatically get them covered and you get them really cheap. You know, it is still going to be like a challenge, especially if you don't have a lot of those comorbidities that Dr. Noble was talking about. But yeah, there, like he was saying, there are other options as well to help with weight loss. And, you know, they might not be quite as effective, but you know, in terms of weight loss, you know, really a lot of studies say, you know, even if you get like a 5% reduction in your weight, which is, you know, if you weigh 200 pounds, like a 10 pound weight loss, you start to see immediate health benefits. You know, you're talking about, you know, less weight on your joints, you're talking about benefits to your cardiovascular system, reducing just generalized inflammation in your body. And, So weight loss is something that, like he was saying, if people come in to talk about it, we're all about it. Yeah, so.
You know, I was talking to somebody and this person was telling me that his parents, because they're getting older, sadly sometimes forget to eat. They skip meals.
Yeah.
But he said the interesting part of that has been that since they've lost some weight now, and the kids live pretty near, so they're not starving or anything, but they're eating much less than they used to.
Mm-hmm.
They went to their doctor. They don't need heart medication. They don't need high blood pressure medication. They don't need, you know, 10 different pills that they were taking.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need now because they've lost significant amounts of weight.
Yes.
And so on one hand, I'm thinking, well, why doesn't the doctor just say, look, you need to lose 30 pounds? I mean, and sometimes maybe some doctors do, depending on your relationship with them.
Right.
Because it can solve so many things. But then I'm also hearing, well, semaglutide, it causes all these problems and it's so bad for you. But yet, people are seeing great results. So, do you guys have a professional opinion? And I do realize it depends on the person, their medical history, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I would just say, as long as you're going and getting the medication from a reputable place, you know, like a medical clinic, and having your labs tracked and you're being closely monitored for these side effects, I would say, there's no real reason that you shouldn't try, you know, at least try the medications. And, you know, obviously there's no real way to tell before giving someone a medication if they're going to have, you know, like a bad reaction to the medication. And so, it's worth giving a try as long as it's like medically
supervised.
So, cause we've heard reports and, you know, to get a little anecdotal of people buying these medications from other countries. And a lot of times they're, you know, not entirely what they say they are. They're cut with, I don't know if cut's the right word, but cut with other medications. And so, you know, you just take a big risk when you get these medications. I don't know if black market's the right word.
Some mysterious online pharmacy.
Yes, exactly. Right. And get them from, buy them from other countries and not necessarily reputable places. Whereas if you know, come to a doctor and we're monitoring like your kidney functions, we're monitoring to make sure you're not having hypoglycemic episodes. And as long as you're doing it safely, you know, I'm not promising that, no one's ever going to get a bad reaction if you do it that way. But if you do, it's at least going to be managed appropriately.
Right.
And it's being tracked and followed. So you're doing it safely.
Yeah, because in general, this is why these prescriptions always have a very gradient of dosing, where they say take this, you know, dose for the first, you know, once a week for the first month, and then you can start to kind of go up on the dose depending on your symptoms. And part of that is the more kind of common side effects for most any medication, which is like nausea or diarrhea, where if you start at a higher dose, you can have those issues more likely versus if you kind of work up a little bit. And I would say that, you know, most of the time patients are using it for weight loss and are not diabetic are usually not going up and up and up and up to the highest doses possible. But the patients who are using it because they have diabetes and to help them control their sugars are using more of the higher doses. But that's kind of what we're watching for, is the hypoglycemia risk, especially like the dizziness and lightheadedness. But to your point as well, there is kind of a difference a little bit in how well you know your doctor and what relationship you have, where it's kind of like the first time you see your doctor, they might be very professional. And then if you've seen them for years and years, they might be more comfortable saying, hey, you know, could you do a little bit more to diet and exercise here to lose some weight, or just be a little bit more straightforward and comfortable in having those type of conversations.
That's true. Mm-hmm. I have a question. So in your practice, when you've seen patients on semaglutide versions of semaglutide, is there an instant weight gain if someone stops using it? Because that's what I've heard too, is it's like Fen-Phen, like Phenermine and whatever it was years ago. You're going to gain it all back and plus some, and or is it, or have you seen that people have been able to maintain?
That's a great question, because in general, for weight loss, it's mainly been studied as a boost to your weight loss, but not a permanent medication. It's not necessarily meant to be taken forever. Now, that being said, by its mechanism of action, it's something that can be a long-term medication. It's studied in diabetes as a long-term medication. And so part of it is not necessarily dependent on the medication, but on your body too. So kind of going back to, everybody is so different, where you kind of know people who eat whatever they want and eat this huge calorie, you know, per day diet, and they never gain weight. And that's just part of their lot in life. They're just metabolism. And then the opposite end of the spectrum, where it's like, feel like I'm starving myself and I barely eat anything, but I just gain weight. And so, you know, by virtue of these medications working, how well they do shows how much insulin resistance is a part of weight gain and metabolism in general.
Good point.
And so people who have such a low metabolism and a high insulin resistance issue, it's like, once I stop the medication, well, that's still a problem for me. That's still my body. And so I still kind of gain weight the way I did. I don't know particularly of any evidence that says if you take this medication and then stop, then my metabolism is worse than it used to be, or I gain more weight than I used to. But but that's sort of the perspective with the GLP-1s like semaglutide. Now, between stimulant medications like Fen-Phen or Phentermine, and there's a distinct difference, right? Fen-Phen is banned for a long time because it caused heart valvular issues and arrhythmias. Phentermine is still FDA-approved weight loss medication. It is a controlled substance, so it has particular rules because it is a stimulant in its action. And the good part of being a stimulant is that it stimulates our metabolism. And so it helps our metabolism be better, if you will. But I tell people who use Phentermine that that it is a bonus to the calories you burn. If you burn X amount of calories by your daily, you know, walking and metabolism or your exercise, then with Phentermine, you're going to burn more calories, essentially.
Okay.
And so it's like if you get a prescription of Phentermine and then go on a cruise and don't exercise and eat a bunch of junk, then you probably won't lose any weight.
Got it.
But if you take Phentermine as like a boost to your exercise, and many people it motivates because it's like, I better not waste it. And if I exercise a bunch, then I'm going to use that and burn even more calories. But statistically, Phentermine was studied in in kind of 3 months pulsating regimens of how you take it, because statistically, if you take Phentermine for 3 months, it usually tapers its effect, where your body kind of gets used to it. You have a tolerance to the medication. And so people's will lose a good amount of weight at first and then plateau. The usual guideline is to take it for 3 months on and then take a break for a month, 3 months, et cetera, and then take it again where your body, you know, uses it more effectively again.
That makes sense. Okay. Is that the recommendation for the semaglutide or not really? Is that totally different?
Yeah. So far, semaglutide's recommendations is gray. Yeah.
Really? Okay. So no formal recommendations necessarily.
Exactly.
Okay.
And by mechanism, it's quite different. So it doesn't necessarily have those tolerance issues where it's saying if you take it for X amount of months, it's just going to wear off. That's not really the case with semaglutide. But yeah.
They both work. But that's good to know that if someone would like to have a healthier weight combined with diet and exercise, they could come see you.
Yes. Yeah. And that is, I'm glad you just emphasized that. And Dr. Noble emphasized it as well, is that, you know, these medications aren't like miracle drugs where you can just, you know, keep having an unhealthy lifestyle, keep eating, you know, however many excess calories you want and sitting on the couch, you know, not to say that, you know, everyone who struggles with weight is doing those things, but, you know, it's saying that, yeah, if you're having issues with your weight and you are dieting and exercising and not seeing the results that you want, you know, these medications are a boost and they help you achieve the goals that you want. And so, that is something that we follow pretty closely with people, is to make sure, you know, well, if you want to get the results that you want, you know, you got to put in some effort as well.
For sure. Thank you so much for both of you for being here.
Yeah.
Appreciate the opportunity to get to know about you a little bit more as people and as physicians. And about your practice.
No, thank you for having us. Yeah.
I'll be your advocate for Kaysville and let everybody know that you're here. So
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
That was a pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you. To all my podcast listeners, thank you for listening. I really appreciate your feedback and your support. Please leave comments and please leave suggestions for future guests. And most importantly, subscribe. Thank you.